the rebel flag, the Nazi flag, which is equivalent, those are equivalent. Those are hateful and divisive symbols. And I don't think BLM is divisive.
I don't, that ain't a good comparison though.
Well, because the rebel flag is worse. The rebel flag were traitors against the United States of America.
Yes.
That's worse than Nazi.
I want to hear what Barry has to say why they're not equivalent. This is pretty.
My last words are going to be, it was the Democratic Party that created the KKK. Mic drop.
No, you can't walk away with that. You can't walk away with that. I know that's true, but the rebel flag and the Nazi flag, you say they're not equivalent?
This is the No Half Stepping Podcast. I'm Leonard Jackson. Real people, real issues, real conversations with no half stepping.
Ladies and gents, welcome to another fantastic episode of No Half Stepping with Leonard Jackson. Hey, listen, we have heavyweights today. I mean, heavyweights, not lightweight, not featherweight, heavyweight. We got B.E. in the right corner, Barry Agin. You've heard him at every MMA or every boxing match. You hear him say, ladies and gentlemen, time to throw down. Did I say that right? Not as good as you, but I said it right.
Yeah, it's good.
And then we got my little bro. Well, he ain't so little anymore. He's a couple inches taller than me, but I ain't mad no more. I got over it. My little brother, Gerald Jackson, he's a corporate executive, and he's done great, and I'm very proud of him. He's been all over the world, and very, very, very smart dude. He's always hitting those books when we were kids, and we used to try to get him out of the room, and he wanted to get those books taken care of first. And Lord knows what else he was doing in that room. My little brother, Gerald Jackson. All right. How you guys doing this morning?
Great. How are you, LJ?
Yep, doing well.
I can't complain. All right, we're going to get right into it, man. There's been a lot going on. And you guys are both very smart people, and you both have pretty much very different perspectives on things. So this is great for our audience to hear both sides, and maybe we could come to a consensus, and maybe we can't. But, you know, you guys are both mild-mannered, and we could have a nice, beautiful conversation. So I'll just jump right into it. We got this, some people say the most consequential election in our lifetime. I don't know about that, but maybe, maybe not. And so I want to ask, let me ask you first, Jerry, did Trump, has he done a good job? Does he deserve another 4 years?
You know, unfortunately, I think much of the good stuff that he's done has really been, in my view, overshadowed with really taking the office of the presidency in the wrong direction. And I think the country is now more divided than we've seen since maybe the late 60s. And 4 more years of this, I'm not sure if the country's going to be in good shape at all. So, no, I don't think he deserves another 4 more years. And we don't have to look much further than his response to the pandemic for that.
Okay. Now, you say the pandemic. Can you give me some examples of what you mean by how he handled it poorly? And then maybe Barry can respond to that.
Yeah, I'll just use some numbers I was playing around with last night or 2 nights ago. When asked about the pandemic, the president normally responds with how quick he was with closing the border to China, right? Which is admirable, right? Nobody's, you know, I'm not going to take that away from him from being decisive and taking action in stemming, limiting the tide of infected cases coming into the United States early in the pandemic when the numbers were, you know, in the sub thousands. Well, here we are today and claiming, now this is where I take issue. He's claiming to have saved millions of lives from slowing the influx of cases into the United States from China. There's three things. One, there were two strains of the coronavirus at that time. One was coming from Europe, where we were still wide open for a couple weeks, and then the other was coming from China. So the virus actually went from China, and it went west, and it went east, and it took on a couple different strains. And so that's facts. And so just recognizing that stemming from China didn't stop anything coming from Europe. And therefore, we had the outbreaks on the East Coast. The second thing is, when you look at what we have today, 40,000 new cases every day is equivalent to 155 airplanes coming from China full of coronavirus folks every day. So if you're going to claim that stopping a handful of flights back in March saved lives, and now you're doing virtually nothing to stop cases that are happening every day, I don't think the impact is what he said it was, right? And the last thing I'll say is the best thing that we can do is protect ourselves and our neighbors by limiting the spray of the virus out of our mouths by wearing masks, right? He still hesitates to say that that is a good idea. And you don't have to go much further than that town hall he had where he explained largely some people just don't like masks. And he talked about waiters. That's not leadership in my view.
Okay. All right, Barry, you got a response to that? I'm sure you do.
So in regards to the plandemic, is that what we're gonna address first?
The plandemic, sure.
The Wuhan China virus that they laid on 175 countries all over the world. Yeah. What he did, he was so far ahead of the game, and he was blasted immediately by everybody on the far left for shutting it all off to travel from China. And it came from China. It wasn't a European bug. So let's turn off CNN and MSNBC and all the BS for just a minute. It was a Wuhan China virus created in a lab to take down the world, especially United States of America. So it was 2 weeks after he did that in January 31st. And Pelosi was actually in downtown, in Chinatown in San Francisco, saying, come on down and let's party and get on down here right now. And then it was, geez, almost 2 months later when Biden was telling everybody, this ain't nothing, all that. Now, you want to talk facts? It's all on video. It's all captured. It's all right there. I do have a hard time. When quote unquote Mr. Fauci, who is considered, I guess, the elite person dealing with, going back to AIDS, 1982, the premier doctor on this, and he was very, very clear on camera and video of saying that 100% mask is the last thing we should do. If you want to go back and check your thing. So things have been, as we know, it's an ever evolving thing. So when the lead doctor in the world, Bill Gates' guy, is telling us not to wear a mask and it's the worst thing we do health-wise, and then it changed, obviously, a month and a half down the road, I got a hard time with that. Basically, everything that has been projected and this and that from all of the top researchers and doctors has been wrong. There's nothing that I think mask, here's what I would say. If you're in your later stages of life in your seven, if the average death, I think we got to go by death rates here and look at facts. And the average death of COVID-19 is 75 years old in this country. So if you do have multiple issues health-wise going on and you are in your elderly state, I say 100%, stay home. Stay protected because you're the one's going to get it. I think I would love to know the death count now on kids under the age of 25, heck, 18. I think we can count on a couple of hands directly to COVID-19. And it was very conveniently changed to COVID-19 to take away from the Wuhan China virus because we don't want to do anything to stir up the relationships that we have with China, the CCP, the most evil empire communist organization that wants to take down America anyway they were. And what we're seeing is bullets are no longer the way of warfare. It's cyber warfare. It's going to be medical warfare. That's how they're going to, I think that's how a lot of our wars we're finding out are going to be taken down. So yeah, I'm going to disagree. I think he did save millions of lives. And like I said, those that lead the far left from the Speaker of the House to the presidential nominee, they were 100% calling him a xenophobe and everything like that. So I guess I'm going to disagree on the plan.
Sure. No. That's what we're here to do.
Just on a couple of those things. One, I'll just say I'm no huge fan of Nancy Pelosi, right? And or the other folks. I'm really talking about, and what I'd like to focus on is the president's actions and leadership on this particular case. I mean, just on the thing about Pelosi, yeah, she wanted to do a rally in San Francisco or something 2 weeks after the coronavirus where we had less than 10,000 cases in the country. But we've got the president now having indoor rallies with no masks today, where the pandemic is at its peak. So he doesn't have any moral high ground against Pelosi, even though I'm not a huge fan of hers. But my point about the point that I want to make is I agree with you 1,000. If I could be more than 100%, I would, about the shape of warfare in the future. It's going to be biological and cyber, right? And I do not agree that this was a planned, you know, built in a lab. There's limited evidence to support that, but there are some people that are saying that. And I don't want to really, I don't think that really matters for my point. My point is, if that is the shape of warfare in the future, I do not want this president to be the commander in chief to fight against it, because we can't afford to lose 200,000 people, probably 300,000-400,000 people by the end of this calendar year, every time some country wants to do a cyber attack. The fact is, there are several countries around the world that have demonstrated the ability to fight this virus with a strong plan, with real national teeth. The only time the president seems to want to use the force of the national capabilities that we have and stop leaving it on the states is in the case of law and order, as you call it. I'm sure.
We'll address that.
But my point is, there are great examples of countries that have even bordered China, that share a border with China, that have dealt with this virus better than we have. And so I'll just leave it there. His leadership in keeping us safe is clearly not there. And if you want to talk about deaths, death rate is really a function of the virus's ability to kill you. But the number of deaths in this country is a function of how we're handling the pandemic. And we are leading the board with over 200,000. No other country comes close.
So in a country of 330 million, so we'll take this, the death rate is 0.003%. 0.003%.
Wait, Jerry, uh-huh. You're shaking your head. Hold on. Yeah, why are you shaking your head?
Oh, go, please.
What math are you using?
Not what math, the CDC.
What's the ratio? 0.03% what? Of the only...
Of those that are afflicted. 0.003%. So there you go. You can go per 100,000.
Great. That's
what I'm saying is we have a higher rate for that from the flu every year. So,
but we have more deaths. We have 3 or 4 times the deaths from the flu every year. People don't feel rate. People feel death. So the fact that we're that is an inconsequential statistic. I don't know why you're quoting that.
Because 75 years old with multiple health issues, stay home. Because that's who's going to get it. These are facts. You can look up the average death of those that are listed, not dying of COVID. The bottom line is you can jump out of a parachute, your parachute won't break, and you died of COVID-19. So this has been fictional. The CDC released it several weeks ago that we have actually 9,000 deaths, 100% directly related to COVID-19. Okay, everybody for the first 2 months, if you were hit by a car and at the hospital, and by the time you were gone, you had something, they were reporting it. We know there's a lot of money involved. There's a lot of things happening. And like I said, the numbers are fictional. Nothing matches up. And the bottom line is, if you are old and have issues, I would say to stay at home. Stay away from Cuomo. Let's stay out of New York City. Don't put them in a nursing home. Let's just stay at home, because that's who it is. It ain't kids. You got to be back at school. They got to be going strong. The bottom line is, so many are going to get it. And I had 3 sons that basically have had it. And the bottom line is, most of them are asymptomatic. There are so many other factors involved in this, but if you are elderly and you have issues, stay at home. I 100% will agree with you on that. Otherwise, we got to get out and start living again. So you're talking about other countries. Let's go by Sweden. You want to have a role model? Sweden's done everything to not lose the economy, to keep people working, to go around, and if you feel a need to protect yourself, we just had literally the CDC say that you forget the vaccination, all you need is a mask. Well, if that's the case, I don't need to wear one, you wear one. I mean, if that's how we're going to, it flip-flops all the time. It was vaccine, 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 vaccine. Now guess what? We get a vaccine, okay. And that vaccine is approved by, you know, the federal government. Well, now we're being told, don't take it. I wouldn't trust it. It's coming from Trump.
Bookmark. I want to give him a chance to respond to some of that real quick.
There's a lot there. The science does show, and the numbers do show, that it's not just old people that are dying from this virus, right? There's people in their 40s, people in their 50s, and underlying conditions, unfortunately, is a pervasive issue in one of the most obese countries on the planet. We have a lot of people with underlying conditions in this country. And you can't tell me that 200,000 people is just 200,000 75-year-olds. And by the way, many of these 75-year-olds are dying when they don't need to die. People that are dying from the virus, they could be alive. These are preventable deaths. These are more preventable deaths than we've had from terrorism, than we've had from wars. This is a big deal, the number of people dying in this country from this virus.
How many people right now, let me ask you a question real quick, because I respect your views so much. How many people right now are afflicted with, right now, depression? Suicide is up over 400%. Kids are not going to school. There are so many things that are happening. Drug addiction is added. We have people that are becoming 100% alcoholics. When he talked about that the cure is going to be worse than the disease, let me tell you, my friend, there's people that are not getting treatment, that are going in for, should be going to hospitals that can't get in. This is a scary time. So what I'm saying is the amounts that we're going to see, the scars that this is leaving, in the far outweigh the 196,000 or whatever we're at now. And it is, hey, one death is too many. And that's what I don't want to come across in this, because to lose anybody in our country, we all don't want that. We can all agree on that. The bottom line is the damage that is being done in so many different ways outside of this is going to far outweigh the Wuhan, China virus.
I agree with you. That's why I think this is such a damning situation. The effects of the virus are greater than just the deaths. You're right. And the virus itself does more than kill you. It leaves you with scars internally, right? It'll mess up with your lungs. It'll mess up with your kidneys. Even if you don't die, some people may be living with conditions from this virus for many, many years.
That's right. But Jerry, let me interject.
Let me just end with one thing. All of this is terrible. The economic impact, the impact to our depression, people being holed up in their homes, families either being closer or falling apart. This is all terrible. Wouldn't it be great if we had the kind of leadership that would stem this, where we'd have fewer cases, fewer deaths, like it was possible with contact tracing, isolation, a national program? These things all could have been put to rest, and we could be doing like New Zealand and having sports out in the open again, economy running again. This could have been done months ago, but it hasn't.
I agree with both of you. You have to try to get back to normal as soon as possible, but at the same time, you have to take precautions. And what does that mean? That means maybe have a national plan. Maybe say, hey, you know what? We at first thought no mask, but now we see that masks do help. Let's all wear a mask. So
let me just say, on that no mask, remember, we were all watching these press briefings religiously, and it was no mask because we have a shortage of masks. Let's leave the masks for the first line of defense.
That's true.
Don't use up all the masks because the people that need them are taking care of sick people.
Okay.
Let me just say don't use them, not because they weren't effective.
100%. I kind of agree with both of you, like I said earlier, but Jerry, I have to lean a little bit, because when Trump has these, when he accepted his nomination, when he has these rallies and stuff, he should probably make it mandatory to wear a mask when he holds these events, just to try to show leadership. Hey, this may or may not help, but let's be safe than sorry, because we have lost 200,000 people, and one life is too many. One life is too many. So let's try to do what we can to prevent the spread. This is, you know what I mean? So I'll just say that part.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with number one. This was a 2-week thing, fellas. 6 months ago, it was 2 weeks. Flatten the curve. You remember that? 2 weeks of flatten the curve. We flattened the curve immediately. And what we saw was that this was more than that. They had one way to take down Trump, fellas. Greatest economy this country has ever seen. They had one way to win. They couldn't do it with the Russia hoax. They tried with impeachment. Guess what? We got one shot, the economy. Because he's winning on every level, including with Black Americans around the country. This has been 100% a plan. And like I said, I don't trust a vaccine. I wouldn't take a vaccine.
Me neither.
I don't care who's issuing this. So I'm going to tell you, there's more than enough of some of our finest doctors, all this trust of science, that have said 100% a mask is not mandatory. We have hundreds. It's amazing. It's the smartest virus I've ever seen. It don't hit 200,000 people on top of each other in New York City or Los Angeles. But my God, you hit a rally with 5,000 people, Trump, it's the worst thing of all time. It's amazing. It knows where to go.
We're going to get into the protesters in just a minute, because I know Jerry's got a strong point of view about Portland and Seattle. Let's just play it safe. Better safe than sorry, right? That's typically what you do as a parent or as a leader. Mm-hmm. And he's not taking that approach. And it's not the media, it's not the press, it's him. When he holds these rallies, when he says, I'm not going to wear a mask, you can wear one if you want, that's not leadership as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's what he's trying to say. He's done a lot of great things for our country. He's done a lot of great things for Black people, so on and so forth. But in that regard, he could have handled it rhetoric-wise a lot better, and probably with this national plan and all that as well, which I haven't really thought much about, but that was a good point. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, like I said, we had the greatest politician possibly that ever lived for 8 years in this country. And I'm not looking for a smooth talker, and I'm definitely not looking for a politician, which we know Trump ain't. And I would say, and LJ, we've talked about this, I want to look at the results and what he's done for this country. And I definitely don't want to go by what he says. And we know that if you think there's not times where I might say, you know what, my God, Donald, why did you say that? But I go by results. But
with your kids, even if your rhetoric means a lot to those kids, my kids or his kids, whoever's kids. So if we pay the bills and pay their college tuition and pay this, pay our actions. But then at the same time, we say, hey, women are whores. And, you know, we say the wrong things.
But come on, LJ. Where did that come from? We had a president eating ain't cheating, champ. I mean, come on.
I'm not talking about saying those things. I'm saying if we have poor rhetoric in front of our children, even though we do great things for our children, it's not a good thing. Would you agree with that?
Okay, I will say this. Poor rhetoric. There's so much poor rhetoric going. I'm not looking for. We had an incredible smooth talker. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody speak like Barack Obama.
I didn't say Obama was better than Trump. I didn't say he was better than Trump.
100%. The most. I mean, you get caught up in eloquence, and I mean, it's amazing. I 100% disagreed with probably several hundred things as far as but I always wish the best for this country, no matter what happened. TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome, is at an all-time high. We know that. There's people from the elite left to Hollywood the people that are running this country that hate Trump. We know that. The Never Trumpers, the Trump haters, whatever you want, they're going to do anything they can to take him down and get him out of office. He's not a great talker as far as smooth and eloquent. And 100%, I am going to be factual. The rhetoric, I know the things that bother you. But like I said, he's not a politician, and he speaks the truth. I love being unfiltered. I think that's I think he actually a lot of times says things that people would love to say, but they're too afraid to.
The Confederacy is not something that we should be proud of, and it's not a proud heritage of our country. So him speaking the truth, I don't think that's the truth for America. I just don't think that's something we should be proud of.
Okay, so BLM is, right? A Marxist organization?
Yeah, we shouldn't be proud of them either.
No, I'm just saying. But guess what? You know what he says about everybody has the right to do what they want. This is a Marxist organization. You guys can go onto their site right now, founded, to take down America. Forget even Democrat, left, right, Republican. They want this is anarchist. This is a George Soros-funded thing that's been happening for many, 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 many decades. So what I'm saying is he also said a Black Lives Matter. 100%, they have the right in this country. We've been afforded this. The First Amendment, you have the right to wear a BLM hat or protest.
Is BLM, is that divisive though, like the Confederacy?
Divisive? It's very divisive. Yeah, it is. It might not be, it's been hijacked, LJ. And anybody that we've now gone from Black Lives Matter, if I say All Lives Matter, I'm a racist. LJ, really? It is beyond divisive. American Lives Matter. And what I'm saying, Chinese Lives Matter, and we know one thing, Black Lives Matter, but Black votes matter even more. Every 4 years, here we go again. And the fact, like I said, you know that you suddenly have to be told, you're Black, you got to vote Democrat? Really? Somebody's going to tell you? That's the government telling me how they're going to keep me safe. When I hear that, guess what? I'm good. I'll think for myself. Don't tell me how to think. And I think the movement, everybody wants the best for this country. Everybody wants the best for this country. But BLM is a Marxist organization looking to take down our country.
When I hear Black Lives Matter, I always try to go beyond the slogan, right? And when I hear Black Lives Matter and I listen to what people are asking for in the rallies around here, my daughter actually after George Floyd's death, our whole community here rallied around the injustice of Black people, Black men in general being shot by police when they have no weapons, when they're not really posing a threat, right? And that's wrong. I think everybody agrees that that's wrong when it happens. The disagreement is whether or not it's systemic or if it's one-off, but I think everybody agrees that when it happens, it's a bad thing and people should be held accountable. And so my daughter actually led some rallies locally. She is not affiliated with the Marxist organization on the website. None of the rallies that were done in my neighborhood were led by some central organization called Black Lives Matter. But what Black Lives Matter did was it galvanized people around the cause of police brutality against Black people that I've actually seen as a pattern since Rodney King back in 96. I've seen this happen over and over. And I think the next generation, which is largely who's running this, don't want to see this continue. So they're using the moniker of Black Lives Matter to rally people around. They are not pledging allegiance to the Marxist propaganda that you're saying is on a website. I have not heard any of that personally.
Look it up. Look it up. Don't turn on a Laker game tonight. Don't turn on the Laker game tonight. I'll tell you that.
I'm not saying that it might not be there. What I'm trying to explain to you is that the movement of Black Lives Matter is way more distributed. It's sort of like the Arab Spring back in the day, right? It's just popping up. People with an ideology or like they believe that change needs to happen, and they're using that as the moniker. There is no central organization that's running all these protests. That just is not the case. It's not a big funded organization.
I love that your daughter's doing that. And I would tell you this, I'm 100% in support of, without a doubt. And that's what's sad, because maybe I can state my feelings and suddenly I'm a racist, which is so, it's, hey, I'm a white male. We've talked about this, LJ. I'm probably the most hated guy in America right now. You know what I mean?
You're the villain. You're the villain.
I'm the villain. I'm the bad guy. And we know that's all BS. There's good and bad in every, I don't care, every race, religion, we know that. Here's the deal. We're always going to have racist people, any side. I don't care where, it's just going to happen. We ain't perfect. We're the United States of America. What makes us great is we're always, always trying to get better. We just had a Black president for 8 years who his entire cabinet was all Black. In my opinion, we're the worst racist country of all time. We're not doing something right if that's the deal. We're never going to be perfect.
You know, I've been around a long time, and I know that there are different kinds of leaders. There's different brands of leadership, and they can all be effective. My thing is when I tell my kids and I'm telling my sons and my daughter about how to be a leader, oftentimes I use a very unseemingly example that, as a guy who grew up as a Democrat, I'm much more independent now, but I think one of the best presidents that we had in terms of integrity and leadership under extreme pressure was H.W. Bush, Herbert Walker. He was not flashy. He was not eloquent. But that man had integrity. You could disagree with him, as I did often, but I never thought that he was doing something for himself. I always thought he was doing something for the country. He was a selfless, thoughtful, smart leader. And I disagreed with a lot of the stuff that he did, but I had a tremendous amount of respect. And if my sons told me that they wanted to behave like him, I'd be like, you know what? Think for yourself. But that's not a bad example of a leader that I would be proud to see you become. I cannot say that about our current president.
And I respect that. Real quick, I respect that very much. And I think right now we're at a point is what do you believe in and what do you want for this country? I would 100, hey, I'm a Ronald Reagan guy. I thought Reagan was my greatest president, who I love. So what I would say is, are you pro, you know, First Amendment, Second Amendment, what things are, is God important to you? There are so many things that we see that are either going to go one way or the other. So I believe this is much bigger than Trump versus Biden. Me personally, this is, what do I believe in? What do I want for my children? And I do understand for those that, you know, he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And I get that. And I guess that's not what I wanted him for. I didn't want a president to transform this country. He's somebody that truly, truly, no matter what, he loves this country more than anything, and he wants his country to succeed. I think right now we're at a point. Do you want to go with riots and looting? Is that what you want? I mean, or are you looking to end this stuff or whatever? So I think it's even bigger than Trump Biden right now. That's all. I think it's a where you stand on that.
Let's, but go ahead. Yeah. Let's talk about the looting and rioting. Before we do that, let me just say this with Chris, Jerry, I want you to do not forget what you're about to say. I'm going to try to say this quickly. Look, my point of view with this whole Trump Biden thing is pretty simple to me. I think Trump's capabilities are greater than Biden's in terms of pretty much every aspect of being the president, except, which is very important, what you say, because what you say drives action. What he says drives these people not to wear masks, to revolt against trying to take precautions. It drives people to want to wave that rebel flag and cheer on the Confederacy. His rhetoric does more than just make him look stupid or, you know, piss off a few people. It drives a movement, which could be scary. But at the same time, this is where I struggle. I know Biden's not going to be able to pull off a lot of stuff that Trump could do. Trump's a smart dude, man. He knows how to I think he knows how to negotiate deals. Jerry, you and I go back and forth quite often about this. You don't agree with that, but I think he's masterful at a lot of stuff he does. You know, this thing he did in the Middle East, a lot of people don't think it was a good thing. I think no one's been able to get this far as him. So his capabilities, what he's capable of is way stronger, I think, than Biden, but his freaking mouth, dude, almost destroys every good thing he does. Okay, that's my two cents.
He has a very strong muscle with what I call sort of leverage deal making, right? He knows how to get leverage on the other party and get a deal done. And that he does that in effective ways. That's how he gets things done. I got nothing against that. I got nothing against that.
That's business 101.
That is a type. That is a way of leading. That is a way of getting
okay.
things done.
That's fine. Okay.
But he's actually for to be the president of the United States is more than just you know getting the deals done. You've got to bring the country together. All the chaos that we see right now. Remember, it's under his watch, right? If riot and looting is happening right now. He's the president.
I don't know who you're talking to right now. That's why I was just saying what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the president. And if it was going to go away, it's going to go away. His answer is bring the military into our cities and run us like a police state. Is that the way to bring America together by force?
After three months, of nonstop lighting a city on fire. You look at Portland, Seattle. These at one time, fellas, were some of the most beautiful big cities our country has ever known.
I live in Seattle.
They are war zones, and it's amazing. They are war zones.
He lives in Seattle.
Yeah, and I announce in Seattle. I love Seattle. What I'm telling you, okay. Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. You haven't gone on and watched the thousands of videos as every single night. Now we're going to get into Antifa with Black Lives Matter.
So what I have done is I've gone to the streets. I have not relied on videos on social media. I've gone to the streets because my son is living four blocks away from where the chop was. And I spent time saying, because I was freaked out by what I saw on TV. So I walked the streets and I saw that it is not a war zone here in Seattle. Right? It's isolated. It's not 20% of the city. It's like six city blocks in a city of millions. This is overblown by the media. It's overblown by the president. He's trying to fear us into electing again.
It's definitely underblown by the media. There's one that presents it. And like I said, you do have to search on it because there are so many that do come in undercover and have taken video. And this is, we're well over 100 days. What are we at, 112 days, 115 days straight. And like you said, this eight block zone, how many hundreds of businesses are gone that were there 20, 30, 40 years? They're gone. And I'm a Seattle fan. But like I said, absolutely the worst mayor. Guys, everything is a local. You know, the great thing about our country is the government doesn't come in and do whatever they want to do. They will get involved when asked upon. And eventually, people get tired of seeing our court buildings and our defund the police and police precincts. The precinct was taken over, what, the first night, Joe? First night? Antifa took over the first night. They were gone. There went Seattle police. They have two different precincts. They have the east and the west, if I'm not mistaken. It was gone in night number one. They took over. You know what the Ted Wheeler did? Zero. Nothing.
And you know, I'll just tell you, the police evacuated. The police left. They basically ceded four city blocks to the protesters so that they could have speeches and they could talk about community and they could bring people together, which is because I walked the streets. I went there. I did not rely on the media. I'm telling you what I saw and experienced with my own eyes. And there was no police there. They self-regulated. Then there were some agitators. It got violent. And now if you go there, it's a non-issue right now. Seattle is still one. If you talk about the economy, Seattle is still one of the most vibrant economies, highest on any economic chart in the country. People still want to move here. Businesses are still here. The economy, even though with the shutdowns, are still moving forward. It is not a war zone in Seattle. Wish that we had more Seattles in America. We would be much more.
Not me, no. And like I said, the old Seattle, yes. But I'm gonna, like I said, man, I feel you're closing your eyes. The media ain't doing nothing. They've done everything. There's five fires going on. There's five fires going on, and they're talking about peaceful protests.
I'm just so Barry, think about this, Barry. I'm telling you what I'm seeing with my own eyes.
I'm telling you the thousands of hours of video that I have watched over the last 120 days of what's going on nightly. So I'm not talking about MSNBC and CNN. You're going to see nothing. It ain't the mainstream media. They've done everything to downplay it. We're just now hearing out. Biden came out.
So Barry.
They came out after over three months of this to finally say, this ain't good. Our polls are down. The race is tightening.
If you were me, Barry, would you trust your own eyes or the news?
If I have video, let me tell you about the news. I don't believe a word of the news. I want facts, not emotion. I want to see, I don't want agendas. And that's what we get. The mainstream media is, what is it, 95% far, far, I don't give a hoot. I don't trust any of it.
He said, would you trust your eyes or would you trust?
I trust my eyes. And when I'm watching video every day, okay, I am a student of that. I want to see actual footage of what's going on. And this is denial if you're saying, man, there ain't been nothing going on there for 10 plus days.
So right now what we're saying is, you trust the news media versus his, hands on the feet on the ground experience.
I'm watching videos of people that are sending in things that from day one, night one in Portland and Seattle and Baltimore. That's what I go by. I don't trust.
Okay.
I do not trust the mainstream media at all.
My son goes to Seattle. Just for the folks watching, my son goes to Seattle University, which is two blocks from where the war zone is, and he's fine. He walks to get his ice cream at the place. He goes and gets dinner. He jogs around his block. He's fine. So the war zone that is being depicted some places, I don't know where that is because it's not in Seattle.
Barry, do you think there's still a war zone in Seattle right now?
We know it's tapered dramatically off as soon as Biden and Harris came out and they realized the polls were tight and they denounced it for the first time. Biden came completely from the bunker. And they denounced it and they realized the polls were tightening and all that. They shifted. It started with Pelosi, Biden, Harris. And by the way, we all know it's the Harris thing, right? We can get that straight. Biden ain't going to see day one in that. He ain't going to see day one.
Speaking of Biden and Harris, Jerry, do you think Biden-Harris presidency would be better than a Trump-Pence presidency and why?
Look, so one of the biggest real issues that we had that was almost destroyed our global financial system was the 2008 financial crisis, right? It is the mortgage-backed securities went bad and all the banks were failing. The money supply in America / the Western world was in serious trouble. It was at the 11th hour, the last minute. It was not George Bush's fault, but it happened on his watch. And it was up to Biden and Obama to respond to that. They got all the way up to the TARP, they basically took the ball from W, who did a really good job of getting the pieces in place, but the execution against that plan was largely Joe Biden. And so going from the worst economy that we'd seen, creating the momentum that continues through, and just look at the charts, Look at the unemployment. The unemployment is a steady straight line from the 8 years of the Obama administration continuing into handing off to Donald Trump the best functioning economy that we've had in the world's history. And Donald Trump continued to make some additional changes that maintained that acceleration. So I feel Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are going to be fine, right? I think they're going to surround themselves with smart people. Probably not going to have a lot of, I won't even go into the Trump entourage conversation. That's probably more, you know, parlor talk or whatever, but I think they're going to surround themselves with good people. And depends on who we have in Congress. And we'll get the country and the economy back on track. Issue number one is how do we get out of this pandemic? How do we fight our way out of this situation? We cannot just wait for herd immunity. We don't have a plan that's going to get us back to good. That worries me more than anything else. I can't keep living in my house like this. Businesses can't keep being. Pandemic is number one. And I think Biden and Harris are going to have a different plan. And I think it'll be better.
It'll all go away. It'll all go away November 4th, Gerald Jackson. You know that. And miracle. You know what? Here's what I'm going to say. And we definitely know the crash of 07, 08 and things that happened. But what did happen, you got to look at things like our deficit tripled. We suddenly went to $19 trillion in debt. And by the way, China holds a significant piece of that, guys, which is scary. You want to talk about scary? The CCP of China, forget Russia. Russia couldn't take down Rhode Island at this point. China, that's a big one. 1.7 billion people. And let me tell you, they are an evil, evil regime. Not Chinese people. The evil regime of China, that's scary, scary, scary.
Trump added to the deficit as well, just so you know. I just want to... Trump added significant amount to the deficit as well, but go ahead.
We started at what? I believe close to 19 trillion.
19.
And we're, I believe, at around 21. And now we're talking about, is it going to be a $3 million? You know, the DNC wants the 3 trillion. We're offering one. These numbers, they are staggering. When I hear them, I'm just, it is crazy. Anybody that you go, what these numbers are being thrown around, it is crazy. What I will say is you have to look at job growth and you have to look at unemployment numbers. And that's where Trump has 100% in not quite 4 years. Completely surpassed anything that the Obama thing. I'm not going to give any credit to Biden.
Just look at the graphs, though.
The graphs are look at job growth and look at percentages of unemployment. And I'm talking, and then when you say Latino unemployment, Black unemployment, the numbers are staggering what Trump has done. And numbers, they said, Obama used to talk about you could never hit a 3% growth. Trump has hit it every single period, every quarter. He so these are facts. This is important stuff. Yes, we did go in. We had the Dow in this now. But what has happened? We know one thing. China was going down. China was going down big. They were on the verge of some big stuff. When the pandemic was released to the world, they were going down and they wanted to take us and the rest of the 175 other countries, whatever the deal was.
Yeah. One, when I'm talking about unemployment and job growth, I'm saying look at the curves. Go find the nationally published document.
I looked that up. You're right. It was going down yeah, before Trump.
Going down, and
I got
slope,
you.
The slope of the curve did not change significantly when Donald Trump took.
I agree with that. Okay.
It's like algebra. It's like.
No, that's true. Keep going. Keep going.
So the second thing is China, it was not going down. I'm sorry. China was not going down. We had an issue with China. Our trade deals with China was a problem for them. But remember, they're the factory for the world. Right. So, you know, everybody who makes anything was making it there. They're investing heavily in developing nations like in Africa. So, you know, we're.
Yeah, they've been so good to Africa. That's a scary thought. Yeah.
I'm not saying they've been good to Africa. Yeah. I'm saying
scary. They're an evil regime. They're an evil regime. And we better really, really, really be careful, because let me tell you, they are so leveraged in the United States. It's frightening. So I'm telling you, 1.7 billion, the biggest fighting army in the world, taking over islands, the things that they're doing,
yeah,
that's our fear. Forget Russia. Like I said, I seriously think Rhode Island would kick Russia's ass at this point.
Look, I think Russia is leading in cyber
I disagree. I like I said, this ain't 1980. I just the CCP is our biggest fear. And I just, they are so in bed with between Hollywood and the NBA and the, it's scary. They've got the backing of every major company out here. The biggest corporations are tied in with China. We just saw we couldn't get a mask. We had to go to China to get our mask right away. Now that is scary. We used to be, New Jersey was the leader in masks for decades.
I agree. Like, China is the competitor for dominance on the global economy and for global influence. No doubt about it. They have been working on this since Nixon opened up to China in the 70s, and they've just been building and building and building momentum to build their basically global empire to be able to provide for their 1.something billion people. Now, I don't agree with their ideology, but I grew up, and I don't use words like, you know, evil and all that stuff, but I understand what you mean. They're not a perfect, I am not a China apologist at all. But what I'm saying is, yes, we need to be paying attention to them, right? We need to be competing with them. And one of the things that we had to compete against the growing China was being a uniting force for the rest of the world. Through the United Nations, through the World Trade Organization, was the only way that we were going to have leverage against China. Going 101 against them, I don't know that we're going to be able to do that solo. And that's the path that Trump has sort of taken us on. He's taking us out of having the influence over the world, which is what we had. Now the rest of the world we don't have as much influence. So you're right. Competing against China is going to be our biggest
threat. For a leverage guy, Jerry, that doesn't sound too Trumpish, you know?
No, what are you solving for? And Trump is solving for America first. He's solving for America only in many cases, right? And right now he's really only solving for Republican Americans. If you listen to some of his rhetoric,
He's giving up leverage. He's giving up leverage, not really knowing that he's doing that in the pursuit of America only, Republican only. Okay, I see what you're saying.
I feel like he's in over his head. I feel like his tricks that he's played in the real estate game are not playing to all the dynamics you've got to consider on the global political scale.
That's a good point, Barry. What do you think about that? He's kind of.
I disagree. Let me tell you, they hate him because suddenly, you know, you gain respect through strength. Our military is the strongest that it's been now in decades. He went right in to immediately boost up our military. You don't have to use it if you got it. If I got a 600 horsepower Mustang, you pull next to me in little old Honda Civic, you know what I got, you ain't gonna mess with it. There is respect.
Do you think we need the world to help us deal with China, or do you think we could deal with China one-on-one?
No, the world, because they want to take over the world. I mean, that's,
guys. So do you think pulling out of the World Trade Organization, yeah, all those other things?
100%, he's right. I mean, I can't believe we bring up that we're supporting the United Nations. So you want to talk about a scam? The things we've been taking care of, we have done everything to support every other country. Shit, we've been given billions to protect Germany. I mean, this stuff had to be cut off. There has been a swamp. And by the way, the swamp has been on both sides. Let me be very clear on that. There has been a swamp, and we've been seeing it play out.
So if we isolate ourselves and challenge China one-on-one, you think
that's... We ain't isolating ourselves. Don't be fooled, because he is the greatest deal maker. Now, we're going to hear there are going to be leaders of other, you know, of other countries that really didn't give a shit about America. And you better believe they're going to do everything to take down Trump and talk. Let me tell you, we've gained the respect. The respect is there. And there is respect through strength, and that's what he gets. So yes, there are always going to be leaders that don't care for him, but there's many that are, and trust me, they know it has to be a national thing. China is that big and that powerful. We can't do it alone.
So what's Trump's strategy to keep China in its place?
Well, I think he does it all the time by taking our naval ships over by the islands that they basically are at a point where they feel they can do everything and get away with it. Let's remember this. The first thing that they said and got to the World Health Organization, another absolutely scam.
So what's his strategy?
Let me just say real quick.
Okay.
We're going to talk about, we were talking about the United Nations. Let's go to the WHO, who the leader, who is not a doctor, is completely in bed with China. And if you guys haven't followed that since, let's say January, they literally said it could not be transferred human to human. Remember, the initial thing was it was at a wet market with a bad case of bat soup. These were lies, but they said it couldn't be human to human. Do you know, everybody, the world went by that for several weeks before we found out that's how it gets spread. We were being told that it came from an animal. That's how it, so there are so many major, major, major players. When you say the United Nations, WHO, globalist leaders, organizations that are in bed with China, they want to, they care nothing about the United States of America. We've been supporting them all for way, way, way too long, paying way too much to carry all these other ones. And I love that he has dropped out of ones and gone away from it, you know, and there's, it's
just, I get that. What's the strategy?
So okay. Like I'm going to tell you Donald Trump's strategy. I know one thing. He is America first. The man loves this country with all his heart.
Do you think he should articulate his strategy to how to deal with China? Or does he just keep?
Nah, you know what? It's just so we can get badgered again by 9,000 reporters every day. And, you know, while we're lobbing softballs to Biden, it's a tough gig. I like sometimes just, if we're going to take out Soleimani, we're going to do it without leaking it to the press or whatever. Too many things are all told what we're going to do. Man, that I had a hard time. Obama always said, we're going to go do this, you know, and whether it was Benghazi or Iran or things, we told the world, America did. What made us great is we did what we had to do. We didn't have to alert the world to our next move in the game of Monopoly. Sorry, Jared, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, look, I think Donald Trump is very transparent. He's one of the most transparent presidents we've ever had. And if he had a plan, he'd be telling us the plan, right? Now, I could be corrected because he did show a lack of transparency on the pandemic when he knew it was deadly and he didn't tell folks because he didn't want to cause panic. I don't want to get off. That seems like a tangent, but I, for the most part, he's very transparent. I don't actually think he has a plan for China. And I'll say something controversial. I think Donald Trump cares a lot more about Donald Trump than he does about all Americans.
I don't agree with that. I think Trump's ego is too large for him not to want his legacy to be, if not the greatest president, one of the greatest presidents. His ego is too big for that.
So he's already trying to isolate conversations about blue states versus America. Like
I hear you, but I don't think it's a, I think it's his selfishness is that he wants to be the greatest president ever.
To his base. I took us off track. I want to go back to China. Because I think, you know, China has been, you know, they've got 10,000 year, you know, cultural history. Like these guys know strategy. These guys, you know, they're a smart, savvy adversary. And we've got to be smart and savvy to compete against them. And right now his strategy is to ban TikTok, right? Like he's going to ban TikTok and WeChat. What's the impact? Who's that hurting?
Time out. They're taking all the, they're stealing all our information. That's a big one. We got to start somewhere. These are corrupt. They are stealing our, they are brilliant in the cyber world. And we've known that. They've already sent some messages the last 10 years of what they can do to us on the cyber war. Let me tell you this, every kid's information out there, sharing it with, it's scary. So I love that. I love that. Let's use American companies. Let's create WikWok. And use America thing and don't steal nothing. I love it.
Jerry, do you think the Chinese are using the data mining abilities through TikTok to not, you know, to go through their kids' parents' devices and so on and so forth? Because that's what I'm hearing, that they're using it for
no.
So you don't think they're using it to get data and to...
I don't, here's gonna be something maybe a little scarier that I'm gonna tell you. Because China has been investing in artificial intelligence and hacking and AI,
they have big time.
They don't need TikTok to be a backdoor, right? They've got some of the best hacking capabilities in the world. And, you know, whether it's, you know, Facebook or your Google account or your account with Wells Fargo Bank, right? Like probably the big techs are protected because they know it's coming and they've got armies of people protecting Facebook, Google, Microsoft.
So there you have TikTok.
But your normal, where we're vulnerable is like where you do banking with your local credit union, how you pay your mortgage. It's like all the other things that you do online that are so easily hackable. Like your house is more hackable than TikTok. And the Chinese know how to do that. So my question is, because, and Barry said this earlier, the new frontier of warfare is cyber and biological. We need a comprehensive cyber security strategy that goes beyond the surface of what normal people can understand around TikTok is where my kids put their data. Well, what you don't realize is how much of your life is digitized and how many vulnerabilities exist that China and Russia and everybody can infiltrate. And banning TikTok is going to make you not,
Jerry,
not going to fix that.
You just said it. You said it. Our big, our large institutions, you know, they have armies to fight against these type of things. So hold on, hold on. China like is not owned by...
Huh? Handful of large institutions.
Okay, handful. Well, you know, I think when you have an adversarial country, nation, controlling a hugely used technology in our country, they control that technology. That's dangerous, especially when it's your adversary that owns it and runs it and can manipulate it any way they want. Yes or no?
If the country of, so there's a couple of logical leaps that we're going to have to make to say yes to that. One, we're going to have to believe that, you know, Tencent and all of its divisions and, you know, these big Chinese companies are run by the Chinese government. Right. That's leap number one. That
you I thought most of these big companies in China are ran by the Chinese government. I thought that was a known thing.
It's more nuanced than that. Like,
okay.
Look at the model. They have influence, but they're not run by. And then you have to understand like the how TikTok is set up. They've got US and Canada. All the servers are like here in the US. They're not Chinese servers. They're not on the mainland of China. Like all the data in the US is staying in the US.
But they have access. They have direct access to that.
So that's the leap that you have to make. You have to make the leap that the Chinese government, and hey, and it's logical, but you have to make the leap that the government is breaking the law, going through the back door and looking into the servers that are here. That
would be, what do you do?
That's breaking the law. That's illegal.
You err on the side of caution.
Because we have the ability to sort of detect, we can detect when we're being hacked. We could see if things were going out the back door. We have that's the whole cyber industry is really, really strong. The US has actually got some pretty good cyber chops. We could detect if things were escaping, right? So I honestly, because I actually spend a lot of time in this world, I don't think that TikTok presents a large cyber threat to America. I just don't.
Well, we're gonna close that's this up.
Cyber experts that I've talked to,
I'll close on this topic by saying this. The fact that our greatest adversary in terms of global world domination, if you will, is China, and they have a huge influence over that technology. It's nothing that helps us sleep at night. So if there's a way we can avoid having an issue with that, then you would probably err on the side of caution, just like you wear a mask. You err on the side of caution.
Here's the other thing that I'll just ask people to think. Before Donald Trump told us they were our enemy, they were our competitor, right? And they were
our partner. I didn't call them an enemy. I said they're
a competitor. You said adversary, right? Which is, you know.
It's like the Lakers and the Clippers. You know, they're our adversary, they're our opponent, whatever.
Right. But for many, many years, at least my entire professional career, we've been treating Chinese companies like collaborators and partners. You know, from Apple to Walmart, we've been collaborating and they've been competitors on the global scale, but we've been economic partners, right? And so we've now made them.
We haven't been partners. They've been screwing us, like I said. So
well, no, he's saying on the, it's been.
No, we're not enemy. We never said that. But like I said, no one ever took a step back to say, you know what?
Wait,
Biden's kids working there?
He's making. We woke up.
Yeah,
we woke up and saw China sitting here staring us in the eye.
Exactly.
But they used to be down here. Now they're right up here. We're like,
100%. Amen. That's a great point, LJ. That's a great point. As if this country didn't need more to, holy, I'm actually scared. Honestly, it's frightening to think because I'm already seeing so many reactions.
Oh man.
On the it does frighten. I mean, this is poor timing. It's all I gotta say. I will say about her, what she did, the legacy she will leave behind is extraordinary. The millions and millions of girls that have wanted to emulate her. What, our second ever female Supreme Court justice, right? It was Sandra Day O'Connor was number one. She was number two, a Jewish. And my gosh, she transcended. She was on 11. Like I said, I might not have agreed with her on so many things, but I respected the heck out of her because you know what? She fought for everything. And I would just say rest in peace. And I hope I would have loved to have seen us let her at least rest in peace for a couple hours before already being told if the right wing try and get somebody in the last 37 days. I mean, I'm forget Portland, Seattle. I just see fireworks coming and it's going to be explosions. That's what I think.
Let me just say this. First of all, everything you just said about Ruth, Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, yes.
Is 100% accurate as far as everything I know. I can't think of anything negative to say about the lady. She's just, her whole career, her whole life has been all about others and service to her fellow man. And, you know, it's fantastic. I mean, it's not like she's 27. She's 87 and she fought and lived
cancer, a lot of cancer,
yes.
and kept
working her butt off. So I got nothing but praises for her. Now, the political part of it is, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, I think the Senate confirms whoever the president nominates, right? So Trump's got September, October, November, December, January. He's got 5 months to get in. I mean, so he's probably most likely going to get
No. We only got, but I think the time frame, LJ, I think it's like 37 days. I think it's a short to get this done. It's got to be very, very quick.
Because he nominates somebody and then the Senate confirms him before he's out of office. So
this has got to be the normal process is a 70-day process. And I believe this one has to go through in like 37.
That's why
this. I don't know the legalities of this. I think it has to do probably with the election, or I'm talking more the election. LJ, he's got to slam dunk it before the end. So that's where I see fireworks coming, because I've seen already so many on the left that were saying hateful things to her because they felt she should have retired back in with the Obama administration, so this kind of thing wouldn't happen. I mean, it's going to get crazy, fellas.
Yeah, I agree with Barry on the crazy, but I think if they want to lock it in before we are in uncharted territory, right? What would happen in a normal election, in a normal cycle, is they would delay the appointment until the new administration comes in, and then, but we're so divided now that is unrealistic. That is not going to happen. And so Mitch has got between now and the election to do it sort of semi-normally, but there is a possibility for him to do it during the lame duck, right?
That's what I'm saying. What are you guys talking about?
That is extremely unprecedented. It will have a lot of backlash, but legally.
That's what I'm saying. Legally, it could be done.
You can do it.
Right. Legally. Well, I think what Gerald's saying, because basically when Obama tried to do it at the end of his second term, there was, we're not going to pass it through. We're not going to pass it through no matter what. And the GOP controlled the Senate. We have an incumbent president. We have a president looking to get his second term. So the GOP is saying, wait a second. This is a whole different scenario. So yes, I think.
Barry.
Yeah.
There's two or three Republican senators who are already saying they're not. You know, you got Mitt Romney, you got the two female senators. I can't remember their names right off the top of my head.
Yeah, Collins. Yeah, no.
Susan Collins and the other one. So they're already saying.
The statements were made. I'll just tell you, Collins is in a battle to win Maine. So let me tell you, she's in the tightest race. She's going for her fifth run. So what I'm saying is that was comments that she gave before. We know Mitt Romney. He's already jumped to the other side. But it is. Let me tell you, hey, this is not a slam dunk. LJ, are you kidding me? We know that. And we saw John McCain be the last vote before he passed away to do away with Obamacare. So who knows what can happen? I'm just telling you, they are going to try and jam the thing through.
Jerry, yeah. Jerry and Barry. I got to create a show called Jerry and Barry. This is great, by the way, this is fantastic. But one thing that we could all agree on, the media just got the biggest gift ever. They need this stuff, man. They just,
absolutely.
You know, they love it. It's the best thing.
The press, the free press, is supposed to be almost like a fourth branch of government that is dedicated to keep people informed. It's not supposed to be tied to political parties.
Absolutely.
That is one of the, if America goes into some bad shape, it's going to be because journalism's not doing its job of being unbiased and informing the American people.
You know what's interesting? Back in the revolutionary days, they were very closely tied to political parties, the journalists, the newspapers of the day. They even had a paper called The Patriot or something like that, where it was just all for the, you know, the patriotic side versus the rebel side, the loyalist or the loyalist and the patriot. So if you look back at more recent history, you had your journalists who may have had biases, but they didn't project that when they gave the reporting. They just reported the news. But now it's the 24-hour news cycle. Not only are they tell you the news, and what do they do after that? So here's our specialist on the topic, Jimmy. You know, and this Jimmy is a diehard Republican or a diehard Democrat. And he'll give you his opinion, right? Just give me the, if you want to just give me the news, just give me the news. Let me form my own opinion,
right,
based on the facts.
No, we can't. That's tell the gone. We can't tell the difference. And the reason I bring it up, and we'll talk about it next time, is do a little research on this, but realize that Mussolini was a journalist, right? And he knew the power of the pen. The revolutionaries, a lot of them were writers. They knew the power of the pen. The pen is mightier than the sword. And so all of us are being manipulated in some way. And especially if we don't know our history and we don't know the power of journalism, where we are offering ourselves up to be sort of the herd, so to speak. And it's only getting worse with social media, with unregulated journalism, I call it.
Well, there's no such thing. You can't.
This is a huge issue for us as Americans.
We'll talk about this more next time, but let me just throw a teaser out up for it. Freedom of the press, baby. I mean, freedom of the press. You got, we're debating a few different what are the rights?
Yeah.
Second Amendment, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, rebel flag, BLM. You know, and I do want to say this, because Barry, you said something earlier and it freaking kind of teed me off, because you got a good point. The BLM / rebel flag debate. Well, it is freedom of speech. BLM, if you go to their website, yeah, it is kind of a Marxist situation. They don't really support the nuclear family or the, you know, there's certain things that I just totally disagree with on their website. But the rebel flag, the Confederacy, that was straight hate.
Those are not equivalent.
They're not equivalent. And they, you know, and I'm not saying I was upset because of the fact that, you know, there's apples and oranges. I was upset because you kind of made a point when you said it's a freedom of speech. But I think the rebel flag, the Nazi flag, which is equivalent, those are hateful and divisive symbols. And I don't think BLM is divisive.
I don't, that ain't a good comparison, though.
Well, Nazi flag. The rebel flag is worse. The rebel flag were traitors against the United States of America.
Yes.
That's worse than Nazi.
I want to hear what Barry has to say, why they're not equivalent. This is pretty.
My last words are going to be, it was the Democratic Party that created the KKK. Mic drop.
No, you can't walk away with that. You can't walk away with that. I know that's true, but the rebel flag and the Nazi flag, you say they're not equivalent?
I don't. Like I said, you and I, we disagree on this, but we got to say this. We didn't even talk about Bob Woodward. We got so much to talk about in the next one with Gerald. Doggone it, we'll get on the flag.
All right.
I'm buying you a beer. We're getting together.
Hey, I owe you a beer. Let's all three go get a beer. I like that better.
Sounds good. Hey, guys, thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation. I'm not even going to call it a debate. I'm going to say an amazing conversation. I love it, and I love you guys, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the No Half Steppin' Podcast. I'm Leonard Jackson. This has been a Laugh Bureau production in association with Leonard Jackson Incorporated. Produced by Sean McBride. Engineered, edited, and produced by Michael Green. Music by Quarks.